Ladies and gentlemen, thank you all for standing by, and welcome to today's interim financial report from January to September 2018. At this time, all participants are in a listen-only mode. There will be a presentation followed by a question-and-answer session, at which time, if you wish to ask a question, you will need to press star and the number one on your telephone keypad and wait for your name to be announced. In order to give the other participants to ask their question, we are not going to allow not more than two questions to each and every participant. I must advise you all that this conference is being recorded today, Thursday, the 8th of November, 2018. And now I would like to hand the conference over to our first speaker for the day, Mr. Bernd Scheifele. Please go ahead, sir.
Hello, good afternoon to everybody. We are calling here from London. Thanks a lot for your great interest in our Q3 earnings call. I sit together, as usual, with Dr. Nagel, CFO of the group, and our investor relations team with Andreas Schaller and Ozan Kasar. I think before I talk about the Q3 developments in our markets, I think I should shortly address the event, which was the real negative event in Q3, which was our profit warning mid-October, which came obviously as a surprise, and which was obviously for myself and also for the company a clear or a big disappointment, because normally it's part of our corporate culture that we try very hard to deliver what we promise. And let me address a couple of points. The first question, there were questions in the market why Heidelberg did a profit warning compared to other companies in the sector. Quite a few reduced their guidance even in a more significant way than we did. But that has only to do with German law. German law is very strict on that, and if we have a significant deviation compared to our guidance, then we have to act immediately. And the German financial authorities are now very sensitive on this issue, because as you know, after the Volkswagen scandal, there is a big discussion in Germany whether the Volkswagen top management informed the market in due time. So we are under very close scrutiny, and that's why we had, from our perspective, no choice then and could not wait until the Q3 earnings call and just reduce the guidance. That's why, by law, we were kept to go that way. If you look to the reasons why we did the profit warning, there are three big issues. The first impact is the weather in the U.S., and we come to that later. You saw, and other companies also reported, I think September was a historically very bad month in the U.S. cement industry, and especially in our core markets in Texas and in the region Northeast, we had very significant rainfall. And when I was on my trip around the world in October, I met our guys, I think on the 10th of October, on the region Northeast in Chicago, and I had a video conference with the South, and they came down with their forecast for the full year by about 50 million euro. Yeah, that's the first big point. The second point is in Europe. You see that especially strong in the region Western Southern Europe. In Q3, which is the summer period, July, August, September, in the last 4 years, electricity prices in Europe typically dropped significantly because we have a lot of renewable energy available. This year, this was not the case, even the opposite. Electricity prices stayed high or even went up, and that's for this reason in Europe overall electricity costs versus our July forecast internal estimate went up for the full year by another 20 to 25 million euro. And the last point is that on the quarry sales, you know that according to our accounting rules, we report the sale of depleted quarries as part of the EBITDA, because it's part, and it's a significant part of the value chain of an aggregates business. How do you commercialize exhausted quarries? Last year, as you know, we had a big quarry sale in Q4, which was in San Diego, Carroll Canyon, which had an impact of about 80 million euros, and which brought the EBITDA from quarry sales up for the full year to around 190. And we think this year we're going to end up at around 100 million euro. You might ask your question, say, hey, Schaefer, why didn't you tell us end of July? Very simple answer. We had a major quarry transaction LOE signed in the greater Seattle area, close to the Boeing works in Everett. Yeah, and here the land developer from Vancouver walked away end of September when the stock market got very nervous about the cycle in the U.S., and we have now restarted the process for this big piece of property, and probably we will finalize that transaction in 2019. That's it on the property. If you look to our Q3 results, I think you see that there are some clear positive news. Yeah, we have a strong organic growth with about close to 10%. Yeah, that shows you that our markets are solid and growing. You see also that free cash flow generation is very good. The financial KPIs are moving in the right direction. Finance costs are down, taxes are down, net debt is reduced, and we earned again a premium on our cost of capital of about 10%. Message is clear. We're going to earn more money in 2018 than we did in 2017, and we're going to continue to increase our dividend in 2019 in the ninth year in a row. Another KPI, which is for me always very important, is the productivity or the efficiency in the company. And if you look to our detailed quarterly report, you will see that our manpower is down compared to last year by about 1,600 full-time employees. If you take acquisition and disposals out, we have organically reduced manpower by 600 FTE. The workforce is around 60,000, so we have a reduction of about minus 1% on workforce, whereas volume average are up in the first 9 months, 3.5%, so also productivity in the company clearly went up by about 4.5 or even to 5%. So core message, results are negative impactly by weather, it's not the markets. We had a clear spike in energy costs, yeah, and the one-off on the quarry sale, the underlying business is okay. We as a board obviously were sitting together after the profit warning and said, okay, what can we do? And that's why we have initiated an action plan which focuses on three areas. And the overall message is here, it is a clear signal that obviously the top management listens carefully to the capital market. We understand the concerns of the shareholders, and it's also clear that we act accordingly. And it's also for us obvious that at the current share price level, to buy our own shares is there is more value in that than doing acquisitions which are above that hurdle rate and which have higher risks to buy your stock, which you own and control yourself. The 3 points are mentioned. We want to accelerate our portfolio optimization. Yeah, we have further divestment potentials now under review. We will have an opportunistic approach, so we will not detail the countries or what we think we plan to do, because we also need a good buyer's world. Yeah, but we have started new actions and are confident that we can accelerate that. On operational excellence, we have started already to implement a new efficiency program in a first step to focus on SG&A. We commit to cut SG&A costs in the group over the next 2 years by about 100 million. And we will check then in a second step whether we have other areas where we still have room for improvement, and we will update you in March when we publish our final results where we are in that area. And the other one is we want to cut back our gross capex to 350 million by average for 2019 and 2020, and the hurdle rate is share buyback valuation, and we will reconsider mid-2019 when we see how our measures are implemented and going, whether we have cash available to do a share buyback. Message is also clear. We try to pull all levels in order to improve margin and cash flow and also support a good investment grade rating. We also believe and are committed that our net debt target of our 2020 vision of 7 billion is now more ambitious, but it's still feasible. And with the three levels which I just mentioned, I think we will try very hard to reach that target. If you go to the next chart, you see the overview of the financial figures. I think you see on the right side the revenues of 9.9%. That's a pretty steep number. And then you see also the EBITDA margin. The problem on the EBITDA is not in aggregates. I think we will, at the end of the year in aggregates, we're going to be fine. The problem is the cement division, and in the cement division, it's the energy piece of the business which is the major problem. If you look to our energy cost for the full year, they're going to be up only on pricing, not on volume, about 100 million euro compared to last year, and that's what's hitting our cement EBITDA margin. And then you see earnings per share down in the quarter, down on the page 12%, year to date 19%. We stay committed that for the full year we're going to keep our guidance that we will have a double-digit increase in group share profit and earnings per share. Chart 5 gives you a little bit of an overview on the Q3 EBITDA, and what you see is pricing is okay, not bad, but not enough to compensate energy in a way, if you want. Then we have net volume is up 78, and then you see costs are up by about 165, out of which about 65 or 70 are energy. And next chart, chart 3, shows you a little bit the history of this year. And here again, what I told you, we had the three drivers for the profit warning is the increase in electricity and variable costs in Europe, then harsh weather in core US markets, and then the lower gain from the asset sales from depleted quarries. That's the core message. We had growth like for like in Q3, but it was obviously not enough to compensate the very slow start in the year of Q1. Chart 7 shows you the weather impact in the US, and this is not a chart made up by Heidelberg. That comes from the Portland Cement Association, the American Cement Association. I think the right one is very important. It shows you that West, South, Central, that's mainly Texas, 20% down in the months of September, and you see the region Northeast, Mid-Atlantic, Virginia, Maryland, were down 21%. That's for us a core area. That's where we have our biggest cement plant in the U.S. in the Lehigh Valley. That's Union Bridge. That's in Maryland. Mid-Atlantic, minus 19.6. New England, minus 26. Midwest, down 8 to 9.6%. And our North American business in this region, Texas and the region Northeast, we do about 60% of our cement business and about 50% of our aggregate sales. And as you know, that September is probably the most important month in our industry, also profit, not only volume-wise but profit-wise, but it was clear that with that miss due to weather in September, it will be very difficult or impossible to hit the numbers. Now, what you see now on next slide is the energy or the power side. What I told you in Europe, the 20 to 25 million euro, and you see now in Q3 electricity cost inflation for Heidelberg. That's not the index. The index looks even worse for Heidelberg in Q3. And if we start with Spain, you ask yourself 53%, what's the problem? Belgium is a country running 100% on nuclear power. They have 7 power plants, out of which 6 are down for the moment. So their power in Spain is short, and the situation also in October has not improved. You see France, Germany is up only 17% for us because we changed a little bit the hedging strategy during Q3. But just to give an example, and you can check that by internet, if you go to the Leipzig Electricity Stock Exchange in Germany and you check what was the spot price for electricity last summer in July, August, September per megawatt hour, You will see the price was around 32-34 euro per megawatt hour. This year we had prices between 54, 56 or 57 euro per megawatt hour, and that's mainly driven by the significant increase in CO2 pricing. And you see the same for Norway and Sweden, and that has obviously created additional headwind for us, yeah, and we had not foreseen that end of July, because our July forecast we do in based on the June numbers, and then the 3 months period comes with July, August, September, and finally when we came to the end of Q3, it was clear that we have a significant negative development on electricity pricing. Chart 9 talks a little bit about more in detail about our portfolio optimization and the acceleration. I think we will do this with a lot of attention. As you know, this year we have already disposed for about 350 million euro. We have sold the German Sandline business. We have sold white cement in the U.S. We have sold white cement in Egypt. We have sold participation stakes in the Arabic Peninsula. We are about to sell Sri Lanka and whatever, so we are on our way. We think this year we will have disposal proceeds of about 400 million euro. Operation Excellence, we talked about that. That's SG&A with 100 million saving target. This number is not coming out of my guts. It's based on a detailed study which Dr. Nagel had done already during the summer break on my behalf over the SG&A development in Heidelberg after the Telcementi acquisition over the last 4 years, and he came to the conclusion that we can cut 100 million, and the split up is we want to cut 65 million on country level. Yeah, we have about 60 or 57 countries in our portfolio, and 35 will come on group overhead. That's mainly area Heidelberg and area overhead including area overhead in Dallas and Singapore. We have already started to implement that. We are taking out in total 3 group functions, yeah, and merge them together in order to streamline the organization and to delayer. And we are also taking out 3 area functions. Yeah, that's what we already have executed, and we are confident that we're going to hit these numbers. We see this as a first step. We will check in more detail where we have further efficiency improvements potentials. In my opinion, the one area is digitalization. I think we can work smarter and efficient if we use really digitalization, not only in the cement plant, but maybe also in the shared service center, etc. I think we have also upside in real estate management. We're very good in the technical part of real estate management, whatever, whether we are in the commercialization process already world class, I would make a question mark. We're going to study that. We have a very significant real estate portfolio. And the third point is also on purchasing. We have to make sure that with digitalization, we pull all levers on purchasing. And this organization goes back to the years 2005 when I joined Heidelberg. I think we have to review that critically, whether that's still best of class, what can be done. And then on the CapEx we discussed, message is clear, share buyback is the hurdle rate. We cut it to 350 for the next 2 years. It is clear that we might exceed it a little bit into 2019 because we have still some projects where some we are committed, some we are halfway committed, but we will compensate that by a reduction beyond 350 in the year 2020. Okay, and then good news is Indonesia. You see here our result development, July, August, September. I think Indocement and Semen Gresik published their Q3 results yesterday. And the message is clear. We see in the numbers a clear turnaround in profitability in the months of September. September was, after 41 months, the first month where the result was above last year and above our internal budget. And that's mainly driven by price increases, which we successfully executed starting end of June. If you in June, the price level in Indonesia arrived at the historically lowest level for the last, whatever, 6, 7, 8 years. And from there, we have increased prices in bag cement by above $6 or 13%. Yeah, and that's clearly visible now in the September figures. If you look to the Q3 result of Indocement, you check that by internet, you will see that the Q3 result on EBITDA level more than doubled compared to Q2, and the EBITDA margin went up in Q3 by about 4.4% compared to Q2. It's also worthwhile noting that in the first 9 months, we gained market share by 0.3%. For us, it was clear that we want to defend our core market position in Western Java and Jakarta. We did not want to give up market share or to sell market share. Yeah, and I think this is good. And we expect a solid Q4 in Indonesia, finally. If you look to the group areas chart, what is it, chart 12, you see on the right side, Q3 sees a clear improvement in profitability compared to the 9 months, but it's clearly not enough to catch up. We are 9 months, like for like, still down minus 1.6%. Yeah. And I explained to you the various factors. North America, chart 13. Our result in Q3, if you look to the weather, I think was okay, but it was clearly not enough to catch up. That's why Region North and Region South reduced their October forecast compared to July by about close to 50 million euro, driven by weather. Our result in Q3 is very strongly impacted by Canada, yeah, where we had strong markets in Vancouver, Seattle, and Portland, yeah, which are really booming, which are growing double-digit. Pricing overall is okay. We have clear price pressure in the region New York and New England due to McInnes. Their pricing is down by about $4 per ton. Yeah. And we think we have a good outlook for the remainder of the year. October was a good month in the U.S. for us. The order book is in good quality, in good shape, so the outlook for U.S. is okay, but we are running now against the clock. You know what I mean? Thanksgiving is coming, and the big question mark in U.S. in our business is always whether after Thanksgiving you restart the quarry on operation, or you just keep it closed and you save on costs. Yeah, and that's why the year comes very fast now to an end. On the margin side, you see we have done well. I think cement is okay. Aggregates, the margin is up. The margin is up compared to last year. The reason there is a one-off of a quarry sale of about $20 million US dollars, which is included in the Q3 result, which is also visible on the margin. Western Southern Europe, yeah, you see also here that the trend, result trend, is clearly improving. Yeah, EBITDA was still down 3.5. Yeah, we are improving against the weak first half, and we expect an acceleration of this trend in Q4, especially in UK, but also in France. Western Southern Europe suffers the most from increased variable costs. We talked about electricity. In Western and Southern Europe, due to our business mix in Bene in UK, we have a very a low clinker incorporation, meaning we use a lot of slag. Yeah, slag prices have increased due to the increased CO2 prices. That increases the input cost for us for the cement production in a significant way. And also in the UK, in the asphalt business, we were hit very much by the increase of bitumen costs, which were for the full year about £10 million, yeah, which is weighing on our result. That's what you see then also in the margins. What we see, if we come to Northern and Eastern Europe, I think here everything looks okay. Results are up in the quarter. 12.7% for the 9 months, 9.1%. We have a very strong performance in Poland and Czech Republic, where volumes and prices is clearly up. We had a little bit of weaker quarter in Sweden, but that's just the timing of a maintenance repair stop in our largest plant in Slite. And we had weak results, continued market pressure and weak results, especially in the Ukraine. You see the margins, I think, are okay. And the volumes are significantly up in Poland and Czech Republic, significantly double digits. So we talk about numbers around 20% or more. So markets are very strong in Q3. Asia Pacific, if you look to the right side, you see on EBITDA, we are only down 0.9%. That comes only from Indonesia. Indonesia in the quarter, all in, including Forex, was down again by about 14 million euro. That shows you the other countries in Asia were up. Yeah, and especially China was good. Thailand was good. Australia was okay overall. Yeah. And that's what you see also in the margin. The newly acquired Alex Fraser business, this asphalt business in Melbourne and recycling business is doing very well. And we expect a solid Q4 due to the better pricing in Indonesia. Africa, Eastern Mediterranean, the figures which you look, you see EBITDA down minus 10.4%. You say, hey, this is what is happening there. But you have to see the numbers are relatively small. We talk about 11 million euro. If you look to year to date for the first 9 months, we are still up 6%. The markets are okay. The Tanzania and Ghana markets are strong. Egypt until September was okay. October was more difficult because the army started to supply more to the market. That led to pricing pressure. Yeah, and the main deviation in the quarter comes that last year we sold our fancy headquarter in downtown Cairo. There was a book gain of whatever, or 2 or 2.5 million euro. That makes the numbers move because the numbers are small. And then we had a license expiry in Israel for our important quarry, Hanaton, in the north. And the last one is obviously the market in Turkey is under pressure. Volumes in the quarter in cement were strong, especially in Egypt with about 9%, Ghana 9%. In aggregates, you see volumes down 27.9%. That's the quarry in the northern part of Israel. From trading, I think the results are okay. They are not so meaningful. I think there are always two key issues. One is about the clinker export prices. That shows you a little bit about the world demand and supply situation. And it is so that in Asia, clinker prices are clearly up by $4 to $6. If you want to buy clinker now in Shanghai, it's up to $40 per ton. That shows you the underlying strong demand in Asia. And the second point is in Mediterranean, due to the overcapacity and the fall in the Turkish market, prices are coming down to $30 or even below $30. Yeah? So we have a quite divergent development. And the second point, and that's a little bit a joke, China becomes now one of the largest cement importing countries in the world. We expect China to import next year about 11 or 12 million tons because the Chinese government managed the market in a way that the prices are very high, and especially the Vietnamese players are importing now significantly to China. Okay, that's it from my side, and I hand over to Dr. Nagel for the financial report.
Okay, thank you, Dr. Schaefele. Good afternoon, everybody. Also from my side, I would like to lead you through the financial report, and we start on page 20. There you can see the group share of profit is up, earnings per share increased from 242 to 272, so the trend of improvement in the group net share of profit continues to improve. This is as mainly financial result and lower taxes overcompensate weaker than expected RCOBD, and you can see that the financial result in Q3 improves by roughly 12 million. So on a yearly basis, our finance cost goes down by 50 million roughly as guided, and the trend will continue. On the tax side, we see an improvement by more than 100 million euro. This mainly comes from one-off previous year where we did a provision for a pending tax audit. cash flow is encouraging. We have a high cash conversion rate. We have kept the free cash flow stable at 1.2 billion despite the comparable EBITDA going down. So we have created more free cash flow out of the EBITDA compared to previous year, which shows that the quality of result, the quality of earnings are pretty good this year. We see a significant increase in working capital still at end of September, which reflects the high business activity in September, but also in October. And we expect a normalization of the working capital towards the year end. We have earned a premium on cost of capital. Return on invested capital is 7.1% last 12 months trailing at the end of Q3, and that exceeds our cost of capital, which is 6.3%. I will come back on that in detail on a later slide. Slide 21, then you can see the profit and loss statement. We have a little additional ordinary result, -34, which comes from antitrust provision in Italy and some smaller restructuring. We see financial result improving as discussed. We see income tax improving, and we see pretty stable discontinued operations and minorities. So per balance, group share of profit at 539 million and 12% up compared to last year. Then on the cash flow statement, as I mentioned earlier, we see a high change in working capital, a high increase in investment in working capital. As I said, I would expect this to come down towards year end. If we look to the CapEx, we see that the sustaining CapEx is about 370 million, on same level as previous year, whereas the gross CapEx is 844 million. You know, we have invested 360 million earlier this year in January in Italy market consolidation, mainly with the acquisition of Cementir and the buildup of asphalt business on the East Coast in Australia. So after that, two acquisitions together, roughly 500 million, gross CapEx has very much normalized. And as Dr. Scheifele has said, we have now increased the hurdle rate to the level of the expected return from a share buyback. And this will bring down gross CapEx even further from now on. If you look to the proceeds from a fixed assets disposal, 369 million until end of September. Also here, we are well on track to reach our three-year targets of 1-1.5 billion euro. And we will see further disposals toward the end of the year and also early 2019. So basically, on the cash flow side, we are well underway, and we will continue to generate cash flow from that. If you look to the functional chart, slide 23, you can see again what I mentioned earlier. The company is able to finance its gross CapEx and its dividends from the free cash flow. And on top of that, pay down debt now down to 9.5 billion at the end of September. Slide 24 shows the balance sheet. You see very little movement there. What you can see is a significant increase in the accounts receivable, as I have said, buildup of working capital due to strong business activity by end of Q3. Then on slide 25, I've put the return on invested capital, and I have given to you on the right-hand side quite a number of detail on our WACC because there have been some questions from the capital market how our WACC is calculated. The WACC calculation is unchanged for more than 10 years now, and you can see the improvement in the WACC mainly comes from external factors like the risk-free interest rate, which went down from 1.3% down to 1.1%, and mainly the beta factor. This has probably the highest influence on that, which is a 0.83 coming from 0.94. So currently the volatility of the Heidelberg cement share over the last time was lower than the volatility of our benchmark. So that leads to a visible reduction in the WACC, and that allows us to earn an even bigger margin on the WACC. Also, tax rate down, that has a little bit of smaller impact and comes, as I said, that overall our tax rate goes down in the group. What brings the WACC also to a lower level is that roughly 80% of our assets are in mature countries with a WACC below 5%. Only 20% of our capital employed is in emerging market with significantly higher WACC rates. I mean, that's it from the finance side, and I would like to give back to Dr. Schaeffle for the other topic.
I keep that short, revised outlook. You have seen that. Dr. Nagel explained that the expansion capex this year is higher due to the two acquisitions at the beginning of the year. Energy costs, we are now guiding higher, more to the low double digits, so it's going to be close to, probably close to 10%. And then we have a last chart on CO2. You have seen that CO2 prices went up significantly. That drives power prices, that drives slag prices. We see that as finally as an opportunity for Heidelberg for various reasons. First of all, we are the ones who are long on CO2 rights. They are not all players in Europe long, to our understanding. So we are long and we are covered until beginning of 2023. So it's not an imminent problem for us. And secondly, we believe that the high CO2 price and the new trading period will drive consolidation in the markets, because there are quite a few markets where the government granted excessive CO2 rights to the cement players. This is now over in the new trading period. And that meaning living from selling CO2 rights from a cash perspective will no longer be a business model. And we will see capacity closure, and by that also increased utilization rate. And finally, I think such a tight environmental regulation as in a lot of industries is not good for the small players. The big ones are going to make it, and it will drive consolidation, and by consolidation, finally, pricing power. Okay, that's it from our side, and we're happy now to answer any question you might have. I hand over to Mr. Schadlmauer.
We are ready for the Q&A session, please.
Thank you, ladies and gentlemen, to all the participants joined over the phone line. Should you wish to ask a question, please press star and the number one on your telephone keypad and wait for your name to be announced. Should you wish to cancel the request, you may press the pound or hash key. Once again, it's star and the number one should you wish to ask a question. And our first question comes from the line of Paul Roger. The line is now open. Please ask your question.
Good afternoon, everyone. So just two questions then. Firstly, maybe going on to the margins in Europe, could you help us understand why the margin pressure was bigger in Southwest Europe than Northeast? And really, I ask that because it looks like both of them had very good growth and faced similar sort of cost inflation. So just wonder if there's a particular market reason. I mean, maybe the pricing was weak in UK or Germany or something like that. And then the second one is on Indonesia. I think you mentioned on the second quarter call that you might be interested in buying some assets in the country. Clearly now you're talking about buybacks versus M&A. Should we interpret that to mean you're less interested in buying assets in Indonesia at this stage? Thank you.
Mr. Rogers, hello. Number second question first. Clear answer is yes. You're spot on. And the second point is on Southern Europe and Northern Europe. You're right. There's one thing, and we mentioned that because we tried to be transparent. We said that we lost last year. We lost market share. We were underperforming the market in London and UK. We rearranged the management. We are back in the markets. We were growing volumes in all business lines, so our volumes are back in the UK. but we had to buy back a little bit in the market. So our pricing, especially in U.K., was relatively weak, and that coupled with high input costs obviously led to a pressure on margin. The top focus in the U.K. is obviously now to get pricing up. And if you take a look to 2019, and I talked to our guys in London yesterday evening to prepare for the call and with the investors meeting, is that we plan double-digit price increases in the U.K. across all business lines. So we plan to increase in ready-mix by about 7 pounds per cubic meter, in asphalt, 8 pounds, aggregates, 2.5, and in cement, 4 pounds. Cement is only 5%, but this means significant price increase in order to regain margin. Yeah, that's now high on the agenda. And on the other side, in NECA, you know what I mean? With all respect, the competition in Norway and Sweden is a little bit different than in U.K. or in Italy, because we are the only producer in these countries. And secondly, in NECA, we include very strong performing countries like Poland and Czech Republic, where I mentioned that volumes are up significantly double-digit. We have very good cost control. Yeah, and here also the results came up very nicely, and that obviously helps to drive the results to NECA. And also to make one comment, I saw that obviously we follow our competitors, and competition is always good. Some competitors report on Europe only in one bucket. We have separated in east-west or in west-south and in north. If you put that as a Europe all together, and then you compare it with other large European player, then you will see that our EBITDA development is just spot on where they are. So we have separated it. We had a weaker part in UK and also partially in Benelux, slow start in France, but we have good in northern part. So if you put that together, overall Europe is, I think, up to like a 4% or whatever.
4.4%
on EBITDA, if you look at it at a combined level.
No, 4.6.
4.6.
And our friends are 4.4.
And then the competitors from the south of Germany are 4.4. So we watch the numbers. Yeah, so we are very self-critical. But if you look it together, I think we are overall, it's okay. Okay, thanks a lot.
Perfect. Thank you.
Thank you. Your next question comes from the line of Mike Betts. The line is now open. Please ask your question.
Yes, thank you very much. My two questions. The first one, maybe I just need a bit more explanation, if you wouldn't mind, on this expansion CapEx. On the slide this time, it shows 700 million in 2018. The slide back in July, it showed 400 million. The 300 million doesn't seem to be to do with the acquisitions, but correct me if I'm wrong, and maybe just explain, if you could, a little bit more on that. And then the second question, and maybe it's too early to ask in detail, but, you know, it's great announcing these big price increases, but how do you make sure that they get delivered? And on one of the slides, it talks about an aggressive commercial excellence initiative. Could you give us some clues as to what that entails?
I think, Mr. Betts, hello. The first one is a technical one. I leave that to Dr. Nagel. On the pricing side, Mr. Betts, and you follow the industry for a long time, it is always difficult for this industry if you have a significant short-term price increase in energy prices to translate that immediately, transfer that to our customers in an industry which, for example, in Europe and also in emerging markets has a low capacity utilization. This is difficult, but we have typically a time effect where we then get a wake-up call, get pressure from the capital market, and then we push very hard. And that's what we see now. And how I read the market is, for example, in the UK, what I see in Germany, what I see in the US, there is a clear push in the market to recover lost margins due to the significant inflationary cost pressure. And we train our sales force globally now very much on price increases, and we have very clear targets to do better. And due to the CO2 issue in Europe, which is a problem, which is a bigger problem for some players than for us, because some players are not long, I think the need and the must to increase prices, yeah, if you look to these electricity prices, yeah, others have also similar issues, yeah, depending a little bit whether they were short or long in Europe, there is a clear pressure to move on prices, because otherwise you will never get the margin back. And that's why I think we will see movements. For example, in Germany, we are out now with €8 plus a freight cost increase, and I think in Germany we should get at least €5.50 or whatever, because even the private smaller players are out with price increases of €6 or more, because they have the same issue with the electricity like we had in Heidelberg. And a similar issue I see also in the U.S.
Okay.
And your technical question, you refer to slide 23, as I see. On the right top here, you have the 544 net growth CapEx. So that is the net figure, including the disposals. And you have to note it is a last 12 months figure. So it includes the Q4 2017 to make it comparable quarter over quarter. So in Q4 2017, as you know, we had an extraordinarily high figure on disposals, which is roughly 130-140 million. Yeah, now if we go forward in Q4 2018, we will not see this 130 million. So if you add up the 130, 140 million to the 544, you end up 680 roughly. And that's the guidance, 700 rounded.
Okay, thank you.
Yeah, okay. Thanks a lot. Thank you.
Thank you. The next question comes from the line of Phil Roseberg. The line is now open. Please ask your question, sir.
Yeah, good afternoon, gentlemen. Thanks for taking my questions. The first one is on the action plans, the accelerated portfolio optimization. Can you give us a little bit more detail of what has changed since you announced this at the sort of the Capital Markets Day? In other words, is the target still the 1 to 1.5 billion from now to 2020? And you know, what are the criteria for these divestments? The second question is just on the price cost. I see in Q3 the price cost is still not in balance. How are the trends in costs going forward at the moment in your view? And when can we expect that price cost will become in balance overall for the group?
Yeah. Okay, on the, Mr. Rosberg, hello. On the portfolio, yeah, as I said, the profit warning was a disappointment and was an alarm call also within the company, and I took that very positively. You have always to make out of a problem, you have to make an opportunity. You have to turn it into opportunity. That's why I said now we take clear actions, the acceptance in the company to take also tough actions, for example, on SG&A is clearly now there. Yeah? And that's why we said also we have to expand our view on the portfolio, whether we can do more in order to streamline the portfolio more aggressively what we originally thought. And secondly, we want to accelerate. Yeah? And we talk about countries, yeah? And it's also clear there are some countries in the world which we believe are very important, are very attractive, which are absolutely core. And then there are countries, if you look from a German point of view, which are a little bit far east of from Germany, moving though closer to Russia and then going even beyond Russia to Central Asia, where we think maybe whether you are there or not is not a must. And also in Africa, there are countries where you can make a question mark. Thirdly, it's also clear we have quite a few public listed companies in our portfolio where we have majority holding and where we do not want to give up the majority. But whether you need to own 75 or 80% or only 51%, that's something, for example, which you can debate. As I told you, we are opportunistic, so we're not going to sell below value. We look to areas where we have a good buyer's world, yeah, where prices and profitability is at the moment on a higher level and where we can do a good deal for the company. Yeah. and we will upgrade you or update you regularly on that. And what was the second on the price cost balance? On the price cost balance,
yeah,
you are totally right. Yeah, that's the problem. The 165, I'm on chart 5 now. And what I told you at the beginning with the productivity is the clear message. If you look to the price cost balance to Heidelberg and to another big European player, then you see they are better positioned. And then you ask yourself whether we hired 1,000 people more, that drives the cost up. The answer is not. Yeah, we are still very efficient. So productivity in my calculation is up 4.5%, which is a good number. The problem is the variable cost, yeah, meaning the especially the energy. That's why I mentioned the price inflation in energy, the 100 million in energy. And that here we are at the moment how we read the numbers. We are, due to our hedging policy, yeah, we are worse off than companies who took a lot more longer position in 2018 on energy, because I told you at the beginning our electricity our energy price inflation compared to last year and plan is up in the forecast 100 million. If we had forward contracts covered all potential energy costs which we can cover in the company, our energy bill and forecast for this year would be more than 100 million down. You know what I mean? So the price cost inflation in our here this year plays very much on your hedging strategy. When you were more longer hedged, obviously you had lower prices, where if you were more shorter hedged, then you have higher prices. And our budget on energy is always based on the forward prices for next year, because I'm not a coal or electricity expert. So our budget in November is always what is the forward price for next year. And then we have a hedging policy which rolls over quarter by quarter, which tends to be a little bit short, which is bad if prices go up, but which is good if prices go down. You know what I mean? And that's what you see on the energy cost inflation. So my answer is, I think we're going to review our hedging strategy for next year, obviously. I think and we will see, and we should see a clearly better trend next year.
Okay, is that from the beginning of next year? I mean, is that just a factor of
these? From the beginning next year, and we see also, Mr. Rosberg, coal price, for example, or the Newcastle index for Asia, which is a big issue for us, has stayed around spot about 108, 110. When we made the budget last year, second half of November in Asia and Singapore, you can check that again, what I tell you. The Newcastle forward contract for coal in Asia was about $85, $86 per ton. That was our budget assumption. That was the budget assumption for Indonesia, for Thailand, and for the coal in India, which we buy externally. And it's also, by the way, the index for China, because in China we buy also partially externally. And, okay, the spot price, the year-to-day spot price on Newcastle, if you go now, is about $108, $110 per ton. It stayed there, but it went up during the first 6 or 8 months. The Newcastle went up like that. That's the problem. And that is shown on the cost-price relationship, which you rightfully mentioned. It's not a fixed cost problem. It's an energy problem. And the key question is, how long and how short have you been in your energy hedging strategy? And that plays this year around a triple-digit million euro amount. That's it.
Thank you.
Okay. Thanks a lot.
Thank you. The next question comes from the line of Arnaud Pinatel. The line is now open. Please ask your question.
Yes, good afternoon, gentlemen. Arnaud Pinatel on Field Investment Research. Just to follow up on pricing in Europe for next year, because obviously what you are telling us is very ambitious in terms of price increase, and we understand it looking at the cost inflation you are flagging too. I understand that the CO2 issue is impacting Northern Europe, the Nordics, Germany, Poland, and a lot of countries. Could you also give us a little bit more visibility on what you are going to do in Italy, and if you are facing the same type of situation on the Italian market, and perhaps for France too? My second question, as we are limited to two, if I'm right, would be on CapEx. During your Capital Market Day, I think you mentioned that you could you know, rebuilt your plants in Nevada, closed wet processes to rebuild dry processes. Just wanted to understand if in your new CapEx envelope, you are willing to achieve this brownfield project.
Yeah, Mr. Pinner, to your last question, what did you mention, upgrade cement plant from wet to dry?
In Nevada,
which
in the U.S., if I'm right, the Capital Market Day, you said you want to modernize your plants because you still have wet processes.
Yeah.
And I just wanted to know if in the new CapEx envelope,
We have not, Mr. Pinnell, we have not checked that in detail, but anyway, the cost for McInnes would be partially, there will be nothing in 2019, yeah, and there will only $10 million for permitting or whatever, yeah, because we are applying for the air permit at the moment, yeah, and there will be some cost in 2020 if it would start immediately, and then it would become more on 2021. So I think principally we would stick to that, but we have to do that again. On pricing in Europe, on Italy, I think just to update you on Italy where we are. In Italy at the moment, we are in September at a price of about 65, 66 euro per ton, which is about 5 euro per ton up compared to last year. The target is now to keep that price at that level, yeah, because normally in Italy in the Q4 it dropped. At the moment it looks okay. And if we keep the September price until December, then we would be in December about 10 euro better than last year as a starting point for the new year. The price increase announcement for Italy is about 7 euro per ton. I think with our competitors in Italy and whatever, we are relatively confident that we will get 5.
And for France, please, can you
Sorry?
Update? For France?
France, we plan for a price increase net about 2 to 3 euro. That would be the first significant in France. But what I see from the market, yeah, what you saw on our numbers on electricity, EDF is also charging the other guys, yeah. So electricity in France is up, and that is a major issue. So we think price increases in France 2 to 3 euro. It depends a little bit how much reaction is needed in order to stop the new grinders. Our friend Sevilioli, the other one from Ecot, will not come in next year, so that will come in Dunkirchen, will come only in 2021. So that's it. Mm-hmm.
Thank you very much.
Thanks a lot.
Thank you. Our next question comes from the line of Robert Gardiner. The line is now open. Please ask your question, sir.
Good morning. Two for me as well. Good afternoon. Two for me, please. Can I ask maybe just on the buyback, what kind of criteria do you need to see in mid-2019 to engage a buyback? Do you think, you know, you'd be back close to your leverage targets by then, allows the buyback kick in, or I'm just wondering what's going to kickstart that buyback there? Are you more confident to get into that kind of 2.5x or 7 billion that you talked about before? And secondly, then, if I could just ask on the property numbers, so you mentioned a 20 million gain in Q3 in the United States. Could you give me maybe three numbers? So one, your total property sales for 17, your total property sales in the 9-month 18, and where you think 18 lands, please. Thank you.
Okay, last one, property. So last year, property exhausted quarries was about 190, maybe 195 or 188. Check the number with Osan Kasa, yeah. And year-to-date, per September, the number is 72. We think we're going to do about 100. That's the number also Dr. Nager mentioned. Yeah. And so that's where we are at the moment. And that's always pending. So it could be more. Yeah, it must be clear. Yeah, but it could be also a little bit less. But I think the 100 is a relatively good average.
Okay, yeah.
And we will see that. On the buyback, Mr. Gardiner, there are two issues. It's not about that much about deleveraging. It's clear that deleveraging the company back to about 7 billion remains a target, a management target for 2020. I agree it's get more difficult, but with our action plan, I think if we do that successfully, reduce, stay very disciplined on gross capex, be successful on additional disposals, we can still hit the numbers. Yeah, that's the first one. Yeah, because you have to see that also if you look to 2019, I think if you look below EBITDA, you will see that our finance costs will trend further down. We have a bond of about 500 million euro running out, expiring in December. He has an interest coupon of about 9.5%. Yeah, so you see, only from that measure, it's again 40 million or even more saving. Yeah, so cash flow generation in the company should remain very solid. So for us, it's the cash situation. Do we have excess cash available? And the second point then is, what's the share price? You know what I mean? Because this is the most important question. Share buyback makes sense from a company point of view if you believe that the intrinsic value of your share, according to Warren Buffett, is clearly higher than your actual share price. And it's a very different story when we had the Capital Market Day in Bergamo. Our share price was around 80, 81. Now we talk about 60, 61. It even went down up to 55. You know what I mean? So that's a total different story. And it is very clear that at a price of 60, we regard Heidelberg Cement shares as a very low-risk, attractive investment opportunity. And we also want to send a clear signal to the market that we understand their reasoning, and we are not principally opposed to it. We follow the commercial logic, and we listen what the capital market is telling us. Okay?
Great, yeah, thank you.
Thanks.
Thank you. The next question comes from the line of Alain Gabriel. The line is now open. Please ask your question.
Yes, good afternoon, gentlemen. Two questions from my side. Firstly, on the disposal program and your plans to accelerate it, many of your peers have also assets for sale, and one thing that we learned is that it's getting the right price will take time. How much confidence, or what gives you confidence that you'll be able to bring that process forward? That's one. And two, on your 100 million SG&A, can you confirm that this is net of inflation, and over what time period? Thank you.
On SG&A, it's net of inflation, whatever you mean by that, but it's going to be over 2 years. Yeah, we start with 50 2019 and then another 50 in 2020, and we will update you in our result presentation for the full year in March. And as I said to you, it's only a first step. We will check, and we need more time for that. Where are other areas where we still see efficiency gains for the company? I mentioned real estate management, I mentioned purchasing, but I mentioned also digitalization. I think in the digitalization in our industry, there is a significant upside on the cost and on the production reliability and also on maintenance repair. Disposals, you are right. Yeah. There are assets for sale, but they are more in areas where we are not in a seller position. Yeah. That's why we said we are opportunistic. That's why we started various projects, and opportunistic means we go then for the projects which offer us the best returns, but we're not going to sell below value. That's also clear. Yeah, and we will be opportunistic, but we have clearly started new processes and are pushing and taking a broader view on our portfolio.
Okay, thank you.
Excellent. Okay.
Thank you. Our next question comes from the line of Arnaud Lehmann. The line is now open. Please ask the question.
Thank you. Good afternoon, gentlemen. I have two questions, if I may. I mean, firstly, when you speak about reducing your gross capex relative to the hurdle rate of share buyback valuation, could you please explain what you mean by that? Does that mean like you need a return higher than your WACC or something equivalent? My second question is related to the U.S. I think it's probably about the third year in a row that you've had some sort of weather disruption on your volumes. I mean, it's you and it's obviously all of your competitors, depending on the regions. And I appreciate it doesn't always happen in the same states and the same parts of the U.S. But if we end up, like every year, having a long, tough winter and then ongoing structural weather disruption in the summer from the hurricanes in the southern part of the U.S. Is there anything you can do to somehow adjust your business model in the U.S. or your logistic to try to take into account maybe, let's say, recurring weather event?
So, Mr. Lehman, I'm responsible for a lot of things, but for me to manage the weather is a problem. Yeah, I agree, and to change my business model, it's also I haven't thought about that, and I fully agree with you that the weather was this year extremely not our friend. It was a lousy Q1, especially in the region northeast. We had long winter. If somebody for a few travels regularly to US, we had still snowing in the northeast in the second half of April. When I made my Q1 result performance meeting with the US management second half of April, and I talked to our Dennis Stone, and he is the vice president for Region Northeast, a very experienced guy. He said, "Dr. Schaefer, what do you want? It's still snowing." You know what I mean? I tell you, this is a quote, and we had a very bad weather, and then we had this shitty rain in September. And just to make a long story short, I was on the 10th of October, I think it was, I was in Chicago. I was visiting our largest quarry in Thornton. We could not leave the bloody quarry because it was raining like in the monsoon in Indonesia and India. So we had extreme wet weather, and that's a problem, and we were not alone. You know, we put it in the profit warning. We were the first to tell you, but all other guys which came out told you, oh, the weather was a problem. Whether we can change the business model, I have to think it over. I'm concerned we cannot.
Okay.
And on the gross capex, and we have to see, let's be fair on that. Two issues. This industry is weather sensitive, and due to the climate change, weather gets more extreme, which reduces the predictability for us. Let's must speak very clear, because normally winter gets warmer, and longer and whatever. That changes the shipping patterns, whether we like it or not. If we are lucky in the U.S., we had last year a very early winter in December. I don't know, maybe it's sunny and warm until Christmas. And then we have other numbers again to tell you in February. You know what I mean? I don't know. The weather gets more extreme, and that reduces the predictability for us. That must be very clear. And the second point is, due to the whole CO2 and climate discussion, the peaks on the energy prices are also much more than they used to be. And as I explained on Mr. Phil Roseberg, you know, the energy pricing is always difficult to predict. It's the question whether you go long or short, and you might be right or wrong whatever way you go. So that's a problem, and that has changed a little bit maybe to the old times. On the gross capex, you know, I'm not an accountant. For me, the message is very simple. Heidelberg is valued at the stock exchange at the moment with 7.1 or 7.5 or 7.whatever EBITDA multiple. Mm-hmm. And the capital market tells me, Schaefer, if your company is 7.5, you should not make an acquisition in a crazy country with high risks for 9x EBITDA. You know what I mean? That's the message, very simple for me. And I have understood that message, and I accept the argument. So that's the hurdle.
Okay, makes sense.
Okay,
thank you.
Thanks.
Thank you. The next question comes from the line of John Messenger. The line is now open. Please ask your question.
Hi, good afternoon. Can I just come back? Mike Betts earlier asked about CapEx, and I'm not sure, maybe he was thinking of the same one, but on slide 27, can we just understand there, obviously, you've reduced $100 million off your maintenance number for the year, but the expansion CapEx, which I think is all about physical CapEx rather than acquisitions, has gone up by 300. Behind that, is there, and I'm thinking here maybe in France, where you obviously talked about a master plan and you've had production difficulties, have you accelerated some spend in some parts of the portfolio? Because I'm just looking at that, and 300 extra, you know, arguably is 150 less in the next 2 years. So I'm just wondering whether you should be more aggressive on reducing your expansionary CapEx than you've highlighted. And the second question was just on hedging again, and apologies to come back to it, but when we look at what has happened over the last 12 months, are hedging decisions, Dr. Schaefer, taken in each individual company, or is the group having a stated strategy and you've adjusted that in any way? You know, where does responsibility lie? Is it a global level where you set these decisions, or is it down at the local level? And are there reasons why that might change looking at 2019, or how you may approach that hedging kind of decision making?
Okay. So, Messenger, hi. On CapEx, Dr. Nagel will come back. There is no acceleration on investments in France or whatever. Yeah, so, no. I think we have some confusion maybe on the numbers. On hedging, Mr. Messenger, that's a very fair and valid question. The principle in Heidelberg is very simple. I have asked a couple of years ago to Dr. Nagel to come up with a hedging policy for the group, and I told him, look to the airline industry, because this is a business. If you are wrong on kerosene management, you get out of it. You get out of business. Yeah.
Yeah.
And what we do is very similar to what airlines do. So we have a clear hedging policy, which is a group guideline, and this allows, and the decision is with the country managing director, but he has a guideline within he has to stick. And for the next quarter, maybe as an example, he can cover by forward even 100%. Yeah, he can.
Yep.
For the next quarter, the second quarter, he can cover by forward maybe 50%. For the third quarter, 25%. And for quarter number four, 0%. So just as an example, it might differ a little bit, but that's the principle. Yeah.
Right.
If he wants to exceed the hedging, he talks to his area Vorstand, and they go to Dr. Nagel because he's the guy. If they agree, then they can go forward 100% for the full year, yeah, because maybe they got a crazy electricity contract in Canada, in Edmonton. We did that 2 years ago, where we had a very cheap, exceptional offer, and then with Edmonton Power, we did a forward for the full year, and Dr. Nagel agreed, and the Vorstand member agreed. If these two guys do not agree, this comes on my table, and then I have to decide. Yeah, that's how it works. And our hedging policy, which I described to you very shortly, is obviously relatively short. So we believe our energy pricing in the group should be not too far away from the real market price in energy. Because if you get it wrong, and this is an energy insensible business, you can be out of business. You are no longer competitive. Yeah? Whereas if you first target is to give security to your guidance, to your board, and to your stock exchange, then you have a tendency to hedge much longer, because then you have a basis for calculation. You understand what I mean? So you say, in asphalt, for example, I have a price increase of 4%. I have a hedge on bitumen price for the full year of 3%. I will do my budget. If the bitumen price goes up 10%, well done. If the bitumen price goes down by 10%, not well done, but you still do your budget. You know what I mean? That's more of what we talk about. And since we are relatively short, right or wrong this year, yeah, we are obviously more exposed to strong energy price increases than peers which are maybe longer and who have hedged maybe bitumen in UK for the full year. Just to be very pragmatic, you know UK and Mr. Roseberg knows UK. If we had hedged our full bitumen volumes in UK this year for 2018, our asphalt division would have produced a £10 million better result. And then we talk about results in Western Southern Europe. You understand what I mean?
Understood. Yes, thank you.
That's the point. Comments on CapEx.
Yeah, I want to comment on this energy. So we have a bracket for each country and for each type of energy, yeah, and the country can decide inside the brackets, inside the upper and lower limits, what they do. And I have checked it; they are pretty much on the upper side currently. So they have done that right. And we had roughly 25 exemption requests this year, and except one or two, we have for longer hedging. Yeah, and we have approved all of them, almost all of them, except one or two. So, I mean, that's the right thing. We have benefited in 2015 and 16 from this. And I do not intend or do not believe that we should change this policy now, because gradually what we see is a plateau on energy price, or even gradually a decrease. So I think the underlying strategy is okay, and I do not think that we should change the strategy. We may give guidance during the budget meeting whether they should go more on the upper limit or the lower limit of the range, but that's their discretion then. So that's how we operate that, yeah. And on the CapEx, I will come back on you. That seems to be a misunderstanding or error in the Q2 figure, because it was clear the spending, the 500 million, were in January, yeah, for Italy and
Fraser.
And Fraser in Australia, and the figure should have been 700 the whole year. That seems to be an error here, but I have to check it, and I will come back on you.
Great. Thank you very much.
Yeah.
Thank you. The next question comes from the line of Gregor Kuglitsch. The line is now open. Please ask your question.
Thank you very much for taking my question. So my question is on the net debt. If you can, I think you said you're going to be above 2.5 times. If you could just kind of give us maybe a bit of a range where you think you end up for the year. Is it kind of 8.6-8.7 billion, something in that region? That's question number one. And then question number two, just to come back on the situation in Indonesia, I'm sure you've benchmarked your EBITDA margins with your peers. I think historically you used to be kind of 10 percentage points higher than your two other peers, at least the ones that we can see. And if I look at the last two quarters, it appears you're 10 percentage points lower. So I want to understand what's going on and whether you agree with that analysis and whether you think there's anything specific that explains that gap. Perhaps it is also to do with hedging and coal pricing and things like that, but any views you have and whether that should converge back to normality. Thanks.
Mr. Kuglitsch, on the Indonesian results, obviously I know the Q2. I saw Q3 yesterday only shortly when I was preparing in the afternoon for our call today and meeting the investors. I had a short chat with Christian Caracciolo. I think he had his phone conference on his results today, this morning. And I know, obviously, since we are a very competitive company, obviously I know the numbers from Simon Krzyzik. First point is, that's why I made the point in the call. Heidelberg is not for the short term. You know what I mean? We want to keep our market position. And in this industry, especially if there is price pressure, if you sell market share, then to get better results short term is a possibility. And just to make it short, if you look to the core competitors, Simon Krzyzik, they lost market share in the first 9 months, 1.5%. We increased 0.3%. There's obviously a reflection on the price point on that. Yeah. And we stopped. That was a conscious decision from us that we said our management, no further erosion of the market position, because we want to keep our core market position in Western Java and Jakarta. And especially in Western Java and Jakarta, we even increased our market share. If you go back to the Indonesian guys, they will tell you. So we kept our above 40% in Jakarta because that's the value for the company. And if we give that up, you know what I mean, then in 5 years, we have no longer a defendable position in Indonesia, and that's what not I'm paid for. And the second point is obviously Simon Krzyzik. They have lower transport costs than us because they are more spread over the country, and transport costs in Indonesia played always a big role and played even a bigger role now because the Indonesian rupiah weakened significantly against the dollar. That's why transport costs, oil and gas, went up significantly, and that has overproportionally hit us. But if you look to what is important for us, if you look to cash costs per ton produced, we are clearly the lowest cash cost producer in the country, and we have an advantage against Simon Krzyzik of about 10%. There is an analyst report on this out this afternoon. If you don't have it, I'm happy to send you that. Okay?
Thanks.
Thanks a lot.
Yeah. Okay, and the question on the net debt, I think you are pretty close to our expectation, provided normal FX development, normal winter, and therefore normal winter, that means normal working capital. If that comes back, we are very much in line on cash flow generation with each single item, except, of course, EBITDA. Year-to-date, EBITDA is 180 million below reported. As absolute values, And that's what's missing in the cash flow as well. Yeah. So you are right, 8.6 appears to be a realistic target in this very moment.
Thank you.
Okay, last question. Who is the final one?
Yeah, our last question for this call will be Rajesh Patki. The line is now open. Please ask the question.
Yes, thank you very much. Good afternoon, everyone. My two questions are, first one is, given the trends this year and revision to profit expectations, do you feel any of the medium-term targets that you set at the Capital Markets Day also need to be reset? And the second one is in quarry sales, given that you could not complete the planned quarry sales this year, do you expect quarry sales to accelerate in the next year compared to 2018? Thank you.
Okay, hi. We, as I said, we're going to do an update on the midterm targets mid of the year, yeah, because we want to wait now for our final results in order to have a clear basis also on net debt and cash flow, and we will update then on the targets in mid-2019. The message is clear. We have to reduce adjust our EBITDA target because we have now a lower starting point, but on the other targets, especially what we see on the net debt target, we stay committed, but we will update that in mid-2019. On the quarry sales, we have to do the budget round, which starts now next week. Then we have an overview over the group, yeah. But obviously, we have still we have a significant real estate portfolio, and that will continue to be a continuous stream of income, and you have to see that 2017, the 180 or 190 million was an exceptional year, which was driven by the Carroll Canyon, whereas this year's number is around 100 million. The year 2016, I think it was 75, you know what I mean? So that's why we would expect for next year a level around 90 million plus minus 15 million euro. That would be, as we speak, our normal level. Yeah. Okay?
Great. Thank you.
Okay. Thanks a lot for your interest. Thanks a lot.
Have a nice day. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.